Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Without a flag, we cannot sail. But this is not the end. Israel cannot and will not crush our resolve to break its illegal siege and reach the people of Gaza.
As the death toll in Gaza nears 35,000, Israel again blocks life-saving aid. We'll speak with Qaeda Araf, one of hundreds of activists aboard the Freedom Flotilla, who've been held back in Turkey after Guinea-Bissau withdrew its flagships under pressure from Israel. We'll also speak with Israeli Ayelet Waldman and U.S. Rabbi Alyssa Wise. They were among seven arrested by Israeli police Friday at the Gaza border while trying to bring food into and accusing Israel of using starvation as a weapon of war against Palestinians.
The reason we came all the way across the world is because the crisis that's unimaginable, and we can't simply stay where we are and not try to do what we can, however we can, to bring attention to this crisis and to stop this crisis.
And we'll look at a new sci-fi documentary about the once thriving Palestinian city of Lod that presents an alternate reality in which the residents were not expelled in the Nakba in 1948.
We use the story of Lod to symbolize the story of the Nakba, the Palestinian Nakba, the demolition and expulsion of over 600 villages all across Palestine. So, in a way, the story of Lod is the story of Palestine.
We'll speak with the Palestinian filmmaker, originally from Lod, and his co-director, an American Jewish director. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's in Saudi Arabia, while Hamas has sent negotiators to Cairo as talks continue over a ceasefire in Gaza and the release of more hostages. On Sunday, President Biden spoke by phone with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. On Saturday, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas called on the U.S. to halt Israel's planned attack on Rafah.
We hope that Israel stops doing this attack, and we call on the United States of America to ask Israel to not carry on this Rafah attack, because America is the only country able to prevent Israel from committing this crime.
Over the weekend, Israel repeatedly bombed areas of Rafah. In one attack, Israel killed nine members of the same family, including a baby. On Friday, an Israeli airstrike on Gaza City killed the daughter and grandson of the prominent Palestinian poet Rafat Al-Arir, who was killed in an Israeli airstrike in December. Shaima Rafat Al-Arir died Friday, along with her husband and two-month-old son. Shaima had recently written a message on Facebook addressed to her late father, writing, quote, "I have a beautiful news for you. I wish I could convey it to you while you are in front of me. I present to you your first grandchild. Do you know, my father, that you have become a grandfather? This is your grandson, Abdurrahman, whom I have long imagined you carrying, but I never imagined that I would lose you early, even before you see him," she wrote. The website Electronic Intifada reports Shaima Rafat Al-Arir and her family were killed while sheltering in the building of Global Communities, an international relief charity. Police across the United States made at least 275 arrests over the weekend as campus protests against Israel's assault on Gaza continue to spread. In Boston, police detained about 100 people after students set up a Palestine solidarity encampment on the campus of Northeastern University. The school justified the raid, citing what it called virulent anti-Semitic slurs after someone chanted, "Kill the Jews," at the encampment. but video and eyewitness testimony revealed the anti-Semitic chant was actually done by a counter-protester holding an Israeli flag. The group Huskies for a Free Palestine said, quote, the only people hurling anti-Semitic slurs last night were Zionist counter-protesters attempting to instigate our peaceful encampment. Despite this, the university exploited this moment to lie about our encampment and justify the brutal arrest of over 100 students, they said. In St. Louis, police arrested more than 80 people at a pro-Palestine encampment at Washington University. The arrested included Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein. At Arizona State University, police made around 70 arrests on Friday as they broke up an encampment on Alumni Lawn. At Indiana State University, state police arrested 33 people Friday as they broke up an encampment on the Bloomington campus. Despite the police crackdown, campus encampments continue to spread, including at CUNY, the City University of New York.
Today, we have an encampment in City College, City University of New York, and we are demanding that CUNY divests and be transparent with the investment. And we are demanding that students, workers of CUNY cannot be harassed, cannot be doxxed for standing up for Palestine.
On Saturday, protesters rallied outside the White House Correspondents Association dinner in Washington, D.C. Protesters staged a die-in to honor the more than 140 journalists killed in Gaza during Israel's assault. Protesters screamed, "Shame on you," as journalists dressed in black tie attire entered the Washington Hilton. Code Pink co-founder Medea Benjamin was violently thrown out of the hotel as she attempted to hold up a sign reading, 100 members of the press killed in Gaza.
I was standing here quietly with this sign and got so roughed up by the security and thrown out of the hotel. It's quite ironic because tonight was all about press. Standing here with the sign is something that's a lot worse than 100 journalists in Gaza being killed.
During his remarks at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, President Biden made no mention of Gaza, but he repeatedly criticized Donald Trump, who he called Sleepy Don, after the former president repeatedly fell asleep during his criminal trial in New York. The U.S. State Department's decided against placing sanctions on the Israeli military despite a finding that three Israeli units had committed, quote, gross human rights violations, unquote, against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank prior to October 7th. Last week, there were press reports that the Biden administration was preparing to impose sanctions on Netzeh Yehuda, an ultra-Orthodox Jewish battalion, but the administration has since reversed course. In other State Department news, Reuters is reporting some senior officials within the department have advised Secretary of State Blinken that Israel's not using U.S.-supplied weapons in accordance with international law. In a memo to Blinken, the officials cite the, quote, unconscionably high-level civilian harm and Israel's, quote, killing humanitarian workers and journalists at an unprecedented rate, unquote. In related news, the New York Times reports the Israeli government fears the International Criminal Court may soon issue arrest warrants for senior Israeli officials, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, over the war on Gaza and for Israel's blocking of humanitarian aid. Hamas officials could also face ICC arrest warrants over the attack on October 7th. Meanwhile, Israeli authorities arrested seven people, including a number of rabbis and Jewish American peace activists who tried to bring aid into Gaza on Friday. We'll speak with the Israeli American author Ayelet Waldman and Rabbi Alyssa Wise. Both were arrested Friday on the Gaza border. Plans for a Freedom Flotilla to sail from Turkey to Gaza with 5,000 tons of life-saving aid have stalled after Guinea-Bissau decided to remove its flag from two of the vessels on the flotilla following pressure from Israel. We'll speak with an organizer of the flotilla after headlines. Ukrainian troops have begun retreating from several villages in eastern Ukraine as Russia intensifies its attacks while Ukraine waits for a new shipment of arms from the United States. Over the weekend, Russian forces reportedly captured two villages in the Donetsk region. Russia has also ramped up attacks on Ukraine's railroad station, attempt to disrupt weapons supply routes. In political news, Arizona Republicans have named an accused fake elector for Donald Trump as a national committee member for the Republican National Committee. Arizona State Senator Jake Hoffman was indicted last week with 17 others in the plot to overturn President Biden's 2020 win in Arizona. The Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigations launched a probe into the recent death of Frank Tyson, a 53-year-old black man who died after police pinned him to the ground inside a bar. Body cam video shows Tyson repeatedly said, "I can't breathe," but officers ignored his pleas as he lost consciousness. The body cam video shows police waited 5 minutes to check for his pulse, then another 3 minutes before CPR was started. One officer is heard joking, saying, quote, "I've always wanted to be in a bar fight. I don't know if this counts." Unquote. Frank Tyson died just 12 days after being released from 24 years in prison. In Colorado, former paramedic Jeremy Cooper has been sentenced to 4 years of probation with 14 months of work release after he was found guilty of criminally negligent homicide in the 2019 death of Elijah McClain. The 23-year-old black man who was walking home from the store when he was tackled by police, placed in a carotid hold, and later injected with ketamine. In March, another paramedic, Peter Kuchiniak, was sentenced to 5 years in prison for his role in McClain's death. And in Australia, thousands of people took to the streets in nationwide protests demanding an end to gender-based violence. The rallies come amidst a wave of violent crimes against women, including a mass stabbing in Sydney earlier this month, where 5 out of the 6 fatal victims were women. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese addressed the crowd, calling the situation a national crisis and an epidemic. This is Natalie, one of the demonstrators.
I think the government needs to declare this devastating thing that's happening to women as a national emergency. Enough women have died, 26, and it's just, it's really, really upsetting. I think it's, we're human. We shouldn't be getting killed.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As the official death toll in Gaza nears 35,000, ceasefire talks are continuing this week with Hamas officials in Cairo, Egypt, and U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in Saudi Arabia before he heads to Jordan and Israel. Meanwhile, Israel's military's chief of staff has approved the continuation of war, and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has refused to call off the expected ground invasion of Rafah. This comes as the International Criminal Court could reportedly issue arrest warrants for senior Israeli officials, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, over the war on Gaza and for Israel's blocking of humanitarian aid. Israel's also targeted humanitarian workers in deadly attacks. Hundreds of aid workers have been killed by Israel since October 7th, including 7 members of the international organization World Central Kitchen, which is resuming food distribution in Gaza today, nearly 4 weeks after its convoy came under attack. Amidst the mounting humanitarian disaster in Gaza, hundreds of activists aboard the Freedom Flotilla were blocked in Turkey Saturday as they attempted to set sail for the besieged Palestinian territory. Organizers say Guinea-Bissau withdrew its flagships under pressure from Israel, but vowed to overcome this latest challenge. A group of UN experts called for safe passage of the vessels, writing, quote, "The flotilla is a material manifestation of international support for the ongoing Palestinian struggle for freedom and self-determination, and the internationally recognized right to receive humanitarian aid without interference or hindrance. Support for the Palestinian people's human rights is acute under the current conditions of genocide, domicide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity," they said. For more, we're joined in Istanbul by Huda Araf, Palestinian-American human rights attorney, organizer with the Gaza Freedom Flotilla. She was also part of the 2010 Gaza Freedom Flotilla, which Israel attacked, killing 10 activists on the Mavi Marmara. Welcome to Democracy Now! Again, Hueda. If you can talk about what this Freedom Flotilla is and the obstacles it has faced leaving Turkey.
Thank you. It's good to be with you, Amy. The Freedom Flotilla is a continuation of the effort of the Freedom Flotilla Coalition to confront and challenge and indeed break Israel's unlawful siege on Gaza. It has been in place since 2007. it is a form of collective punishment, which is not only unlawful, it is a war crime, and yet our governments have not been doing anything about it. And in fact, the very fact that for decades our governments have been allowing Israel impunity is what has brought us to this point where Israel for 7 months can commit live stream genocide and the world doesn't move. The world, meaning our governments, of course, people are mobilizing, but we're not stopping it because Israel is so used to this impunity. We come together, the Freedom Flotilla Coalition, and announce that we are going to sail an emergency flotilla in light of the dire situation in Gaza, which includes mass starvation and now famine that has set in. Again, war crimes, but our governments aren't doing anything about it. What do? Pay lip service to Palestinian human rights, airdrop food, or talk about a maritime corridor which leaves Israel in control of what, if any, aid at all gets to a people trying to survive a genocide. It's absolutely obnoxious. And one of the things that the UN special rapporteurs that you mentioned in their statement said that our Freedom Flotilla is legitimately challenging Israel's control over the entry of aid, which no government is doing. And that's what needs to be done. How can we be in a state where a country that has been found to be plausibly committing a genocide by the world court is allowed to control what, if any, aid gets to a people trying to survive a genocide? It is unconscionable. And so we have come together. We are now and have been in Istanbul, Turkey. We have ships ready to go. We have one cargo ship loaded with over 5,000 tons of humanitarian aid, largely food, clean water, medicines, baby formula, nutrition for children, diapers. That was all ready to go. Hundreds of activists from 40 countries were here knowing that Israel has killed activists before in such a mission and yet still willing to risk it to do what no government has done. And yet, instead of our governments supporting our efforts, they have conspired to actually block us. And so what happened on Friday is we received a surprise communique from the Guinea-Bissau International Ship Registry saying that they have withdrawn their flag from two of our ships, the cargo ship and the main passenger vessel. Now, we cannot sail without a flag. It was clear to us that the withdrawal of this flag was under pressure, likely from the United States and Israel, because the way that they communicated to us was highly unusual, if not unprecedented. In their communication to us, they specifically referenced our trip to Gaza, and they had demanded from us a number of things which were impossible to meet in the two-hour time frame that they gave us, which some of those things included a complete manifesto of our cargo, all of the ports we were going to sail in, a letter from the receiving port where we were going to arrive saying that our arrival and carry of humanitarian aid is welcome. They gave us a two-hour window. This is never done. It's like when you go to register your car, you know, at the DMV, they don't ask you everywhere you're going and who is going to be in your car. I don't know of a situation where this has been done before. And yet, because we did not meet these and were not able to submit all of this information within a two-hour window, they informed us that our flag has been withdrawn. This is not the end.
What made you believe that Israel
and politically?
What made you believe that Israel had put pressure on Guinea-Bissau to remove its flags?
Again, because the demands that they made of us, specifically referencing our planned trip to confront Israel's siege and our intent to arrive in Gaza, and giving us a two-hour window to submit all of this documentation about our journey, and knowing that Israel has done this before. It has tried all kinds of methods in order to sabotage our missions. It has sabotaged our boats before. It has attempted to get various and succeeded in getting various countries to block us from leaving port. And it was being reported that the United States specifically was putting pressure on Turkey, the government here, to block us from leaving. But we were sure we were going to be able to leave from Turkey because the support here is so great. So Israel has tried all of these efforts. It actually boasts about these efforts. But if Israel thinks that this is the end of our effort to break the unlawful siege of Gaza, they are sadly mistaken. A lot of the activists who were here are fired up. They are determined. They are going back home at this point until we can reflag our ships, which hopefully will be in the coming weeks, and coming back with even more people and more determination. So this is a minor setback, but it's certainly not the end. And we will not.
We will not stop
in our efforts to break this siege.
If you can tell us who the activists are, the doctors, the nurses, the lawyers who are on board the ship.
I would love to. They are amazing people from all over the world who have left their families, who have left their jobs, who have left the comforts of their own home to undertake a mission where we could not guarantee their safety. So we had doctors coming from as far as New Zealand. We've had activists from South Africa. We had truck drivers from Ireland. We have mental health and social workers from the United States, students, professors, retired U.S. military, retired U.S. like active combat, former FBI agents. We had parliamentarians, the former mayor of Barcelona, European parliamentarians, Algerian and Jordanian parliamentarians, really a cross-section of humanity that is sick and tired of our governments allowing the ongoing persecution and now genocide of the Palestinian people. And we are determined to stop this by direct action, which is, of course, goes along with all of the other efforts that have been taking place all around the world. And we also want to send our respect, admiration, and solidarity with the student movement across the United States and now spreading across the world. This is what's needed. We are going to bring about the change. Our governments have sadly failed. They only pay lip service to democracy, freedom, and human rights.
Among the high-profile activists that are part of the Freedom Flotilla is Nkosi Mandela Mandela, South African member of parliament and the grandson of Nelson Mandela. He spoke to Al Jazeera last week.
I am a living example of the efforts of the international solidarity movement. I am free. South Africa is free. We were able to defeat apartheid South Africa because of the support that we had from the international community. And therefore, we want to thank them for taking this stand and for ensuring that they will not be complicit. They will no longer be silent. They will be the voice for the Palestinians.
Now, in the summer of 2010, the Israeli military attacked a Gaza Freedom Flotilla, killing 10 people, including an American citizen. It was the Mavi Marmara that they attacked, the ship. The Vice President, Joe Biden, defended the raid in an interview on PBS shortly afterward.
You can argue whether Israel should have dropped people onto that ship or not, but the truth of the matter is Israel has a right to know. They're at war with Hamas, has a right to know whether or not arms are being smuggled in. And up to now, Charlie, what's happened? They've said, here you go. You're in the Mediterranean. This ship, if you divert slightly north, you can unload it and we'll get the stuff into Gaza. So what's the big deal here? What's the big deal of insisting it go straight to Gaza?
President Joe Biden in 2010. Huwaida Raf, this shows the stakes. 10 people were killed, yet you're willing to go on this ship to try to challenge the Gaza blockade. As we wrap up, you 30 seconds. Talk about that risk.
Yeah, first of all, I need to say that Joe Biden's absolutely mistaken. Israel has no right, had no right to intercept and attack our ships because it has no right to place the Palestinian people under collective punishment. Again, it is a war crime, and a UN panel, independent investigation found the very same thing. Amy, it's a sad thing that it has to be a life or death situation to deliver food to people who are being deliberately starved. But that is what we have here because our governments have continued to allow Israel to do this. I left my two kids at home, and I promised them that I would come back. I know they need their mother, and I hoped to be able to fulfill my promise to come back, but I didn't know. I don't know. But what I do know is that I can't leave to them a world where this can happen, where people can be slaughtered for months on end, oppressed for years, and the world does nothing.
So my action here and a lot of the activists that have joined us and the many, many more who want to join us now are do it with the same conviction that we have to act to change the world that we want to live in and that we want to pass on to generations to come. And we are willing to risk our lives to do that.
Yaref, Palestinian-American human rights attorney, one of the organizers of the Gaza Freedom Flotilla, speaking to us from Istanbul, Turkey. Next up, we speak with two women, an Israeli-American author, Ayelet Waldman, and U.S. Rabbi Alyssa Wise. They were among seven arrested by Israeli police Friday as they attempted to get aid over the Gaza border, accusing Israel of using starvation as a weapon of war. Stay with us.
خدني على الأرض الخضراء عند المية والخضراء عند النبعة والتينة والدواني الحزينة عند النبعة والتينة والدواني الحزينة والأرض تندم وتقول خدني على فلسطين خدني خدني على فلسطين
Take Me to Palestine by El Fanoun, Palestinian popular dance troupe. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli police arrested seven rabbis and Israeli activists Friday at the Gaza border during an action that accused Israel of using starvation as a weapon of war against Palestinians. The delegation of rabbis for ceasefire carried bags of food to the Erez crossing between Israel and northern Gaza amidst reports that famine's imminent for more than a million Palestinians in Gaza. Among those who were joining the protests was Rabbi Abi Dabush, who is a survivor of the October 7th Hamas attack on Kibbutz Nirim.
I'm really proud of it. Being here in the name of Jewish values, being here in the name of Jewish discourse and the Torah, and talking about human rights for all people here. Of course, I can't forget the Israelis. I was in Kibbutz Nirim on October 7th, and can't forget the hostages. But then again, I can't forget also our people, you know, human beings in Gaza that are starving, got killed by thousands, and have devastating ruins.
For more, we're joined by Rabbi Alyssa Wise. She's now in Philadelphia after her release and return to the United States, founder and organizer with Rabbis for Ceasefire, former co-executive director of Jewish Voice for Peace, where she was also the founding co-chair of JVP's Rabbinical Council. She's now back in Philadelphia. And joining us from Tel Aviv is Ayelet Waldman, the Israeli-American novelist and writer who was arrested alongside Rabbi Wise and six others. Her husband, Michael Shaban, is also the noted novelist, the Pulitzer Prize winner, who expressed deep concern about Ayelet's status on Instagram, writing, "She was there in the company of a group of American rabbis, Rabbis for Ceasefire, to show the world, the people of Gaza, and their fellow Jews in Israel and around the world that Judaism teaches justice, loving kindness, peace, mercy, liberation," Shaban wrote. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Why don't we start with Ayelet Waldman, the noted Israeli-American author, novelist, in Tel Aviv right now. Ayelet, why did you go to the Eretz Crossing? Explain what it is and what happened.
The Eretz Crossing is the crossing in before the latest calamity where you could cross in and out of Gaza, of course, very restricted. Now it is something else entirely. We approached the Erez crossing as close as we could get, but obviously it's blocked off. Why I went, I think it is incredibly important that those of us who have privilege use that privilege to call attention to this ongoing catastrophe. So I want to be very clear. My husband was worried.